seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
In January 2023, Constance Martin and her boyfriend Mark Gordon disappeared and went on the run with their newborn baby, Victoria.
A nationwide search resulted in the sad discovery of Victoria's body, and the pair have now been charged with killing her, which they both deny.
I'm Jack Hardy, a news reporter for the Daily Mail. I'll be in court every day, reporting the events as they happen.
And I'm broadcaster and journalist Caroline Cheetham. Together, we'll take you behind the headlines, bringing you the evidence, witness statements, and testimony from the Old Bailey in London.
This is The Trial, Constance Martin and Mark Gordon.
So after more delays this week, when Mark Gordon decided not to give evidence to the jury, today his partner and co-accused, Constance Martin, entered the witness box to give her side of the story.
Tonight, in an extra episode of the podcast, we'll be bringing you what she told the jury, including that she would never have harmed her baby and she never carried Victoria around in a shopping bag.
She told the jury a traumatic event from her childhood meant she'd cut herself off from her family years before she met Mark Gordon.
And she said the couple had over 30 burner phones because she was convinced her family had private detectives following them.
And she said Victoria was her pride and joy.
Welcome to episode 12. Constance Martin gives evidence.
So we're back with this extra episode today because, again, we've had a few delays at the Old Bailey. Now, you'll remember we told you at the end of last week's episode that we were expecting Mark Gordon to give evidence to the jury as his defence case started. But, Jack, it didn't quite happen like that.
Yeah, that's right, Caroline. So when the jury came back in on Monday morning, John Femiola KC, who's representing Mark Gordon, he stood up and said, "My Lord, I do not call the defendant." And it seems that Mark Gordon had had a change of mind, and the problem then was the other witnesses his defence team wanted to call were either not there or they weren't ready. So the court actually had to be adjourned until Wednesday.
So on Wednesday, we did hear from a couple of witnesses for Mark Gordon, which we'll come to later on in this episode. But for the first part today, we need to focus on the big development in court, and that was Constance Martin taking to the witness box in her defence. Again, this was something we weren't sure was going to happen because the jury hadn't been told if she'd be giving evidence. But today she did. And Jack will come to what she said in detail across the course of this episode. But essentially, she told the jury that the death of her daughter, Victoria, was the worst thing to ever happen to her.
Yeah, so she also said she would never have done anything to harm her. She also denied the baby was ever kept and carried around in that little shopping bag we've heard so much about, which is what the prosecution say. In fact, she said the baby had always been carried inside her jacket. And she said the death of the baby was something she found hard to live with.
So let's start at the beginning. And we should say that the beginning of her evidence was a little bit stop-start. Because as she composed herself, and in fact, as she was being sworn in, she started to choke back tears and she asked for a few minutes.
Yes, that's right, she did. And so around 7 minutes later, she returned to the witness box and her barrister, Francis Fitzgibbon KC, began his questions. Their exchange has been voiced by actors.
Ms. Martin, I'm to ask you some preliminary questions first.
Yep.
Did you do anything to harm baby Victoria?
Absolutely not.
Did you do anything cruel to baby Victoria?
No, I did nothing but show her love.
Did you expose her to cold?
No.
Did you allow her to get too hot?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
As far as you're concerned, did you give her anything less than the proper care that you thought she deserved?
I gave her the best that any mother would, yeah.
We will come back to look at the sequence of events in more detail, but can you tell my lord and the jury how you feel about her death now?
I don't think it's anything I'll ever move on from. I feel guilty because she was in my arms. I feel like it's not an easy thing to live with.
What did you feel about her death at the time?
I think initially it was disbelief, shock, intense grief.
You were born on the 16th of May 1987, and if my poor maths is correct, you are now 36 years of age?
Yes.
You come from a wealthy family?
Yes.
You had the advantage of a private school education?
Yes.
So just to give you a bit of background here, she confirmed that she attended Leeds University, where she initially studied Arabic and philosophy. She dropped philosophy and continued with Arabic, Middle Eastern and Islamic studies. And she said, apart from an incident where she got a fixed penalty notice for stealing a T-shirt from a shop in Leeds in 2009, which she said was a silly prank that went a bit wrong, she'd never been in trouble with the police.
She then confirmed that after her grandmother died 10 years ago, she was given a split in a family trust fund. She said it was a discretionary trust and she couldn't simply have access to all the money, but money could be given to her for things like a house.
She also told the jury about some of the work that she'd done over the years. She said she'd worked as a researcher for Al Jazeera's English channel. And at other points, she'd worked in a cafe, she'd done some nannying and some photography. And she said she'd been in Egypt at the time of the revolution in 2011. And some of her photos were subsequently used by Al Jazeera.
She then told the jury she'd been very blessed and had travelled the world, which she described as her passion. She'd visited countries including India, Nepal, Nigeria and Peru.
When did you first meet Mark Gordon?
Please don't hold me to dates and years. I think it was in 2014. I met him in a shop in East London. It was a little Indian shop selling incense and stuff. I knew the shopkeeper there and someone had left their handbag and she said, "Can you watch that guy over there and make sure everything is all right?" while she ran to give it back. We laughed about it and went for coffee. We were good friends at the start and then we went travelling. We visited Peru and we got married over there, but it's not recognised over here. It's not legally binding.
What year was that?
I believe 2016.
Would it be fair to say you have conformed to what some people might regard as an unconventional way of life?
I want a conventional life, but we have had very great difficulty with my wider family. Certain things haven't been a choice, but I would like a conventional life.
Did you introduce Mr. Gordon to your family?
No.
What reaction did you have from your family?
We have had a long history of issues in that regard.
Was it your decision to separate yourself from them?
I stopped speaking to one of my family members 2 years before meeting Mr. Gordon, and when I met him, I decided that was it for me. I didn't want anything to do with them.
Was it a happy relationship with Mr. Gordon?
Like every relationship, it has ups and downs. But we have been together for 9 years almost. There is a lot of goodness there.
Did a time come when you and he decided to have children?
Yes.
At that time, were you still separated from your wider family?
Yes.
That brings us to what happened in 2017.
Now, at this point, Constance Martin asked for a break, but Judge Mark Lucroft pointed out that they had only actually been going for 8 minutes, so he encouraged her to continue. Mr. Fitzgibbon then said in 2017, Constance Martin was around 6 months pregnant and the couple were in a distant corner of the country when they attended at a hospital for the first time with no previous history of antenatal care. They had been living in a nearby caravan. Mr. Fitzgibbon then asked why they had been in that part of the country at that time.
I was trying to flee my family. I had spoken out about a childhood traumatic event against one of my family members and also the sale of my grandmother's estate. Her will was gotten rid of and they used a letter of wishes to sell the estate against her wishes. I started speaking out about the fact that I thought it was wrong. That's when I realised I was being followed by private investigators quite heavily. I didn't think it was fair on my child to live under those conditions.
Did you have access to the trust fund?
I was 8.5 months pregnant and they cut me off overnight.
What was the reason for you giving fake details at the hospital?
I wanted to bring up my child in a happy home, away from the constant scrutiny of my family. I felt the only way I could do that was to go into hospital with a fake name.
Looking back on it now with the benefit of experience and hindsight, how do you feel?
I would do anything to protect my child. What I think I was naive about was giving the story about being a traveller. It brought more attention on us, but I would still use a fake name.
Where had you been living?
In a tent.
Was it your intention to be continuing to live in a tent when the baby was born?
I mentioned to a midwife there that I had nowhere to go. I felt I made a bet with the devil because I had asked for social services help, and that was probably the worst decision.
Why?
I have to be careful what I say. From my perspective, having gone through the system of social services, I don't believe they are there to help parents, or children, for that matter.
You went to hospital for the birth of your first child. Had you thought about giving birth in the tent?
No, absolutely not.
Then he asked about the advice she'd been given about breastfeeding a baby. She said she'd breastfed her first two children. She said her second child was a home birth, which she'd chosen because she'd had a bad experience with the NHS during the birth of her first child, and she'd hired a private midwife. She said her third and fourth children were removed at birth, so she didn't have a chance to breastfeed them.
So at this point, a question from the jury was read out by the judge, asking why there had been a supervisioning order in place for this first child. Constance Martin explained that when she was in hospital, she had given a fake name, and she said they had nowhere to go and she'd asked for social services to be called. When they found out she didn't have a house, she said that became their reason for imposing the order.
She then spoke about the incident that we've mentioned in a few previous episodes, where she took a social worker back to the tent where she'd been staying in 2017. This was when she was pregnant with her first child, known as FF, to the court. She said she was told by the social worker that it was no place to bring a child back to, but she said she'd never had any intention of bringing the child back to the tent. She actually intended, she said, to ask for social housing when the baby was born.
She then explained that with her second child, she'd been interested in hypnobirths, so she wanted to incorporate elements of this, such as using hypnosis for pain relief, into the birth process. She had no concerns about having a baby at home, she said.
Now, she was then asked another question from the jury via the judge. This was whether her access to the trust fund had been restored by the time she'd had her second child.
They started giving me £50 a week when I was at the mother and baby unit, and I sent quite a stern email to the trustees to explain they had a duty of care to my children, and they started giving me £1,700. It went up to £2,000 a few months later. I've got three brothers who are all part of the trust, and they had houses purchased for them. I have been treated quite differently. I don't think they agreed with my marriage.
She then talked about how they rented a house in the city, and she said the children had more than enough, including having their own rooms. Her oldest child, she said, had a bouncy castle in the bedroom, and it was great.
Have you done anything to harm any of your previous four children?
No, absolutely not. That's the sad thing. Mark and I love our kids more than anything in the world, so I'm pretty angry that they have to go through this process. It's not good enough.
It was said at the start of this trial that you and Mark Gordon put your interests ahead of your children. Is that true?
No. There is literally nothing I would not do for my children.
So Mr. Fitzgibbon said that all four children had subsequently been put up for adoption, and he asked Constance Martin, in summary, how she felt about what had happened.
I think it was one of the more disgraceful cases, and I think if anyone looks at it from the outside properly, they would see how wrong it was.
We'll take a quick break there.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So Mr. Fitzgibbon then resumed the evidence from Constance Martin by handing her a few printouts of pictures that she'd posted on her Facebook page with her and her children. Now, they showed her smiling in the sunshine with them, and she actually spent a few moments looking through the pictures before they were passed to the jury.
They then turned to the circumstances surrounding the birth of Victoria and the events that followed. She said that in December 2022, they had been booking into holiday rental cottages at a time she was approaching full term of her pregnancy. She said that despite what happened with their previous four children, she still did want to have children with Mark Gordon.
What was the plan when the baby was born?
Initially, we wanted to move abroad, but we were unable to do so because a member of my family took me to court a few years ago, and it put a stop on my ability to travel, and Mark's passport was taken off him. I wanted Victoria with me for the first 3 to 6 months of her life, so I could give her the love she needs. I don't think it is fair for any child to be removed from her parents, then to potentially give her to a carer who could take care of her without the local authority knowing. Then potentially they could bring her abroad to meet us.
Why were you moving around the country?
We moved from our house a few months before December, and we were moving jurisdictions every 1 or 3 days, so no local authority could have any jurisdiction over the baby, and so my family couldn't contact social services.
Why did you think she would be taken?
Because my four other kids had been taken.
So then they discussed the birth of Victoria. She said they'd paid for a holiday cottage over the Christmas period in Northumberland. This is the place we were shown pictures of right at the start of the trial, which the owner told the police they'd left in a bit of a state. Now, Constance Martin said she'd bought all the equipment, the bedding, the spare sheets, that she said she needed for her to give birth in the house. She explained that she would have no objection whatsoever to calling for help or to going to hospital if there had been any complications.
Then she was asked about some of the things that were found near the couple's car after it burst into flames on the motorway in Bolton. And a juror used this opportunity to send a note to the judge asking for clarity about the 34 burner phones, which you may remember were among the items that were recovered by the police from a nearby field.
The 34 burner phones, what was that all about?
My family. There are two sets of people in my family that hired private investigators. One is Blackstone and the other is London Consulting Limited. A lot of them are either former police or secret service, so they can hack into anything. They are constantly on my phone and in my email. One family member hacked into my email account and accessed some quite sensitive information. We only use phones where the battery could come out of it, so they could not use GPS trackers. It provides us with more time.
She then described how she'd been excited for the birth of the baby, more than nervous. She said she was born on Christmas Eve in the upstairs bedroom of the house in Northumberland.
We know you had the placenta with you. Why did you take it with you?
I didn't know what to do with it, to be honest. It was quite large, so it's not something you can dispose of easily. I wanted to bury it and plant something there, but having Victoria, we hadn't got round to it, really.
You describe wanting to escape the attention of social services. Was there any reason?
We wanted to keep Victoria with us, so I didn't want to tell anyone about the birth.
Now, they then spoke about leaving the house in Northumberland, and their car, a Suzuki, broke down a few days later, which forced them to call a breakdown firm. Constance Martin said she questioned the way her car broke down, adding that it had broken down in questionable circumstances. Now, contrary to the evidence we had previously heard from the breakdown driver at the start of the trial, that there was no baby with the couple, she insisted she had the baby with her inside her coat. Victoria was a pretty easy baby, she said, and didn't make much noise, particularly when they were holding her and nurturing her.
It might be suggested to you that she wasn't born then. What do you say to that?
I'm not sure why they keep going on about that, but she was born on the 24th of December.
In the final days of December and the start of January, the couple stayed at various hotels across the north of England, travelling mainly by taxi, and Mr. Fitzgibbon asked how the baby had been during those early days of her life.
Was she feeding well?
Yes.
Did you have any reason to be concerned about her health and well-being at that time?
No.
What about your health?
I was in good health physically, but I was in a high state of anxiety. I feared someone was going to break down the door and take her away. It was a mix of being joyful at the same time as being anxious.
At the time, you got another car, a Peugeot. Where did you get that?
It was a town beginning with B. What begins with B near Manchester? I think it was Bradford. I believe it was Bradford, yeah.
That's near Leeds.
Yes. Sorry. I meant Leeds.
You bought it in cash for around £700 to £1,000. You had enough cash to do that sort of purchase?
Yes. Mark and I have been through about 15 cars in a very short period of time, and they have all done the same thing. So I don't know, really.
Then she said the Peugeot caught fire, and all the money they had was lost.
It all happened so quickly. Our plan disintegrated with the car. We acted on impulse and instinct. What are we going to do after the car?
She said they decided to run away because they feared the fire service would attend, no doubt soon to be followed by the police, who would take Victoria away. She said she only had a chance to grab a few things from the car for the baby before it was consumed by the fire. From there, they got a taxi to Morrison's in Bolton, where CCTV captured them with Victoria inside Constance Martin's jacket. She said the baby liked being in the jacket. It soothed her, she said, and she liked being close to her or Mark. Then they got a taxi from Bolton to Liverpool.
Having got to Liverpool, you took another taxi all the way to Harwich. Why did you decide to go to Harwich?
We wanted to be by a seaport, to go abroad as quickly as possible.
Why not do that from Liverpool?
Harwich was the place we had in mind. Does Liverpool have a seaport? I'm not sure. Harwich is what we had in mind.
Now, it was around this time that we heard Greater Manchester Police had issued their first press release about the incident, saying a burning car was found and they were worried about the welfare of the driver. But Constance Martin said she was not aware of this media coverage until someone actually approached them in Harwich and asked if they were the people from the TV news.
We were walking near the train station. A man approached us and said, "You two are the two people off the TV." And that is the first we knew about it. And that's when we realised we were in the news. So we panicked. We thought we would go to a place with more people, like Eastham, where we could lay low for a bit. We thought we could blend in somewhere easily, but it was actually the opposite problem.
So the jury then began to look at still images from CCTV of the couple as they moved across East London. And it was at this point Mr. Fitzgibbon asked Constance Martin about a key claim that the prosecution has repeatedly made throughout this trial.
Was there any time before Victoria died when she was being carried in a carrier bag?
No.
Now, she said by this time, which was January the 7th, Victoria was in good health.
I hadn't slept very much in hotels. I was in a heightened state of panic that they would take her away. I was tired, but I was happy to be with one of my children. I think Mark and I were in a state of panic about what to do. I became quite hypervigilant. I thought everyone knew who we were. I didn't really know what to do about that.
Over the hours that followed, they bought items from several shops across East London, first in Eastham and later in Whitechapel. They included a collapsible buggy and a dummy for the baby. Constance Martin said the buggy came with a little sleeping bag which was designed to keep the baby warm outside.
So then she said she'd gone into a branch of Primark to buy some supplies that she thought they needed until they managed to get abroad. But she decided to abandon the shopping trip because she became worried that other customers recognised her from the news. She said she panicked and left, and they then decided on a new plan.
We wanted to get a flat in Eastham, but we realised there was no way that that was going to happen. The problem with a flat is that if someone banged on the door, like the police, there would be nowhere to run with Victoria. Our options were diminishing, so we thought, let's get a tent, lay low away from prying eyes.
Did you consider the health of baby Victoria?
It was the primary concern. How we were going to protect her. We always protected her. Parental love, care, warmth, food. As long as a baby is provided for, it doesn't matter if they are on the move or not. They are usually asleep. I don't think she would have known what was going on, if I'm honest.
Mark Gordon then bought two pillows, two sleeping bags and a tent from Argos. She said they also bought more blankets and warm layers from Lidl. That evening, she said they'd decided to get rid of the buggy because no taxis would pick them up and they were afraid they were too recognisable as the couple from the news.
So it was at this point, you might remember, that the prosecution say Victoria was first transferred into the little bag for life that the couple were now carrying.
While you were in East Ham, did you have Victoria in a carrier bag at any point?
No, absolutely not.
She also said in CCTV images which showed the couple with their arms full of bags that Victoria was at this time securely strapped to one of their chests in a sling.
Do you remember having a concern at that time that the weather could have an effect on Victoria?
Yes, of course. Because she is my baby, I worried about her all the time. And if I thought we didn't have enough clothes to keep her warm, I wouldn't have put her in that position.
Mr. Fitzgibbon then asked what their plan had been at this point.
Remind us your reason for choosing New Haven.
We wanted to be near a port. One of us would go to get a cottage we could pay with cash, and so be near a port while at the same time we could find someone who could take abroad, smuggle us abroad. The plan was to stay in the tent for 1 or 2 days.
They then pitched the tent in some woodland by a fallen tree, so it was sheltered from the wind. It was comfortable, she said. They'd plenty of blankets and quilts to keep them warm.
Obviously, it would have been preferable to be in a house. That is just common sense. At no point did I think she was in danger because we took so much care of her. She was our pride and joy.
On that day, which was January the 8th, she said Victoria had been in good health. She'd been feeding well and sleeping well. They stayed inside the tent all day and then all night. Mr. Fitzgibbon paused for a moment. Then he said,
"What happened to Victoria?"
I had her in my jacket and when I woke up, my head was on the floor, and when I was sitting up, she wasn't alive.
That was January the 9th, she said. So we should mention here what actually happened during Mark Gordon's defence evidence. We know he changed his mind about giving evidence, but his barrister still had some witnesses to call.
So first up, it was an expert witness called Dr. Srinivas Annavarapu, who we were told is a consultant in paediatric and perinatal pathology. Now, he'd written a report in which he'd offered an opinion on the placenta, which was found in the back of the burnt-out car on January the 5th, specifically how long he believed it had been out of the womb. And he said, based on the level of decomposition, it was more likely to have been weeks rather than 1 or 2 days between the birth and the recovery of that placenta. Now, this is important, you might remember, because the defendants have always insisted that Victoria was born on December the 24th.
So under cross-examination, he accepted the fact the placenta was in a burning car that had taken the fire brigade half an hour to extinguish, which may have had an effect on how quickly it decomposed.
So then another doctor, called Dr. Mohammed Ehsan Rafiq, was called to give evidence about the law around pregnant mothers and the advice they're given about co-sleeping. He said mothers are not legally obliged to register a pregnancy or to receive antenatal care, and he also agreed there'd been a trend towards home births and natural births.
He also said one approach some parents took was called attachment parenting. He said this was based on increasing the physical closeness between parent and baby in the first few weeks, which can improve development and bonding with the child. This could involve things like carrying the baby in a sling, and he also agreed that another principle was co-sleeping, and he said 22% of babies bedshare. So that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow as Constance Martin continues giving evidence in her defence.
We should remind you that Constance Martin and Mark Gordon deny manslaughter by gross negligence. They also deny perverting the course of justice, concealing the birth of a child, child cruelty, and causing or allowing the death of a child.
In the meantime, you can follow us on X at The Trial Podcast and contact us on thetrial@mailmetromedia.co.uk.
You can leave a comment on Spotify or send us a voice note on WhatsApp on 07796 657 512. Start your message with the word trial.
See you then.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.